But even if it is something esoteric that is in only one small portion of Gaia's mind, I can call it up if I need it, though such recall may take a bit longer than if the memory is more widespread. Look, Trevise, if you want to know something that isn't in your mind, you look at some appropriate book film or make use of a computer's data banks. I scan Gaia's total mind. Trevise said, How do you keep all that information from pouring into your mind and bursting your cranium? Are you indulging in sarcasm, Trevise? Pellerat said, Come, Golan, don't be unpleasant. Trevise looked from one to the other, and with a visible effort allowed the tightness about his face to relax. I'm sorry. I'm borne down by a responsibility I don't want and don't know how to get rid of. That may make me sound unpleasant when I don't intend to be. Bliss, I really wish to know. How do you draw upon the contents of the brains of others without then storing it in your own brain and quickly overloading its capacity? Bliss said, I don't know, Trevise, any more than you know the detailed workings of your single brain. I presume you know the distance from your sun to a neighboring star, but you are not always conscious of it. You store it somewhere, and can retrieve the figure at any time if asked. If not asked, you may with time forget it, but you can then always retrieve it from some data bank. If you consider Gaia's brain a vast data bank, it is one I can call on. But there is no need for me to remember consciously any particular item I have made use of. Once I have made use of a fact or memory, I can allow it to pass out of memory. For that matter, I can deliberately put it back, so to speak, in the place I got it from. How many people on Gaia, Bliss? How many human beings? About 1 billion. Do you want the exact figure as of now? Trevise smiled ruefully. I quite see you can call up the exact figure if you wish, but I'll take the approximation. Actually, said Bliss, the population is stable and oscillates about a particular number that is slightly in excess of 1 billion. I can tell by how much the number exceeds or falls short of the mean by extending my consciousness and, well, feeling the boundaries. I can't explain it better than that to someone who has never shared the experience. It seems to me, however, that 1 billion human minds, a number of them being those of children, are surely not enough to hold in memory all the data needed by a complex society. But human beings are not the only living things on Gaia, Trev. Do you mean that animals remember too? Non-human brains can't store memories with the same density human brains can, and much of the room in all brains, human and non-human alike, must be given over to personal memories, which are scarcely useful except to the particular component of the planetary consciousness that harbors them. However, significant quantities of advanced data can be, and are, stored in animal brains, also in plant tissue, and in the mineral structure of the planet. In the mineral structure? The rocks and mountain range, you mean? And, for some kinds of data, the ocean and atmosphere. All that is Gaia, too. But what can non-living systems hold? A great deal. The intensity is low, but the volume is so great that a large majority of Gaia's total memory is in its rocks. It takes a little longer to retrieve and replace rock memories, so that it is the preferred place for storing dead data, so to speak. Items that, in the normal course of events, would rarely be called upon. What happens when someone dies whose brain stores data of considerable value? The data is not lost, it is slowly crowded out as the brain disorganizes after death. But there is ample time to distribute the memories into other parts of Gaia. And as new brains appear in babies and become more organized with growth, they not only develop their personal memories and thoughts, but are fed appropriate knowledge from other sources. What you would call education is entirely automatic with me, us, Gaia. Hellerat said, "Frankly, Golan, it seems to me that this notion of a living world has a great deal to be said for it." Trevise gave his fellow Foundationer a brief sidelong glance. "I'm sure of that, Janov, but I'm not impressed. The planet, however big and however diverse, represents one brain. One. Every new brain that arises is melted into the whole. Where's the opportunity for opposition, for disagreement? When you think of human history, you think of the occasional human being whose minority view may be condemned by society, but who wins out in the end and changes the world. What chance is there on Gaia for the great rebels of history?" "There is internal conflict," said Bliss. "Not every aspect of Gaia necessarily accepts the common view." "It must be limited," said Trevise. "You cannot have too much turmoil within a single organism, or it would not work properly. If progress and development are not stopped altogether, they must certainly be slowed. Can we take the chance of inflicting that on the entire galaxy, on all of humanity?" Bliss said without open emotion, "Are you now questioning your own decision? Are you changing your mind? And are you now saying that Gaia is an undesirable future for humanity?" Trevise tightened his lips and hesitated. Then he said slowly, "I would like to, but not yet. I made my decision on some basis, some unconscious basis, and until I find out what that basis was, I cannot truly decide whether I am to maintain or change my decision. Let us therefore return to the matter of Earth. Where you feel you will learn the nature of the basis on which you made your decision. Is that it, Trevise?" "That is the feeling I have. Now, Dome says Gaia does not know the location of Earth, and you agree with him, I believe." "Of course I agree with him. I am no less Gaia than he is." "And do you withhold knowledge from me? Consciously, I mean?" "Of course not. Even if it were possible for Gaia to lie, it would not lie to you. Above all, we depend upon your conclusions, and we need them to be accurate, and that requires that they be based on reality." "In that case," said Trevise, "let's make use of your world memory. Probe backward and tell me how far you can remember." There was a small hesitation. Bliss looked blankly at Trevise, as though for a moment she was in a trance. Then she said, 15,000 years. "Why did you hesitate?" "It took time. Old memories, really old, are almost all in the mountain roots where it takes time to dig them out."
15,000 years ago, then, is that when Gaia was settled?"
"No. To the best of our knowledge, that took place some 3,000 years before that."
"Why are you uncertain? Don't you, or Gaia, remember?"
Bliss said, "That was before Gaia had developed to the point where memory became a global phenomenon."
"Yet before you could rely on your collective memory, Gaia must have kept records, Bliss. Records in the usual sense. Recorded, written, filmed, and so on."
"I imagine so, but they could scarcely endure all this time."
They could have been copied, or better yet, transferred into the global memory once that was developed. Bliss frowned. There was another hesitation, longer this time.
I find no sign of these earlier records you speak of.
Why is that?
I don't know, Trevise. I presume that they proved of no great importance. I imagine that by the time it was understood that the early non-memory records were decaying, it was decided that they had grown archaic and were not needed.
You don't know that. You presume and you imagine, but you don't know that. Gaia doesn't know that.
Bliss's eyes fell. It must be so.
Must be? I am not a part of Gaia, and therefore I need not presume what Gaia presumes, which gives you an example of the importance of isolation. I, as an isolate, presume something else.
What do you presume?
First, there is something I am sure of. A civilization in being is not likely to destroy its early records. Far from judging them to be archaic and unnecessary, they are likely to treat them with exaggerated reverence and would labor to preserve them. If Gaia's pre-global records were destroyed, Bliss, that destruction was not likely to be voluntary.
How would you explain it, then?
In the library at Trantor, all references to Earth were removed by someone or some force other than that of the Trantorian Second Foundationers themselves. Isn't it possible, then, that on Gaia II, all references to Earth were removed by something other than Gaia itself?
How do you know the early records involved Earth?
According to you, Gaia was founded at least 18,000 years ago. That brings us back to the period before the establishment of the Galactic Empire, to the period when the galaxy was being settled. And the prime source of settlers was Earth. Pellerat will confirm that. Pellerat, caught a little by surprise by suddenly being called on, cleared his throat.
So go the legends, my dear. I take those legends seriously, and I think, as Golan Trevise does, that the human species was originally confined to a single planet, and that planet was Earth. The earliest settlers came from Earth.
If then, said Trevise, Gaia was founded in the early days of hyperspatial travel, then it is very likely to have been colonized by Earthmen, or possibly by natives of a not very old world that had not long before been colonized by Earthmen. For that reason, the records of Gaia's settlement and of the first few millennia thereafter must clearly have involved Earth and Earthmen, and those records are gone. Something seems to be seeing to it that Earth is not mentioned anywhere in the records of the galaxy, and if so, there must be some reason for it.
Bliss said indignantly, "This is conjecture, Trevise. You have no evidence for this."
"But it is Gaia that insists that my special talent is that of coming to correct conclusions on the basis of insufficient evidence. If, then, I come to a firm conclusion, don't tell me I lack evidence."
Bliss was silent.
Trevise went on. "All the more reason, then, for finding Earth. I intend to leave as soon as the Far Star is ready. Do you two still want to come?"
"Yes," said Bliss at once.
"And yes," said Pellerat.
Chapter 2. Toward Camporeon. 5. It was raining lightly. Trevise looked up at the sky, which was a solid, grayish-white. He was wearing a rain hat that repelled the drops and sent them flying well away from his body in all directions. Pellerat, standing out of range of the flying drops, had no such protection. Trevise said,
I don't see the point of your letting yourself get wet, Janov.
The wet doesn't bother me, my dear chap, said Pellerat, looking as solemn as he always did. It's a light and warm rain. There's no wind to speak of. And besides, to quote the old saying, in Anacreon, do as the Anacreonians do.
He indicated the few Gaians standing near the far star, watching quietly. They were well scattered, as though they were trees in a Gaian grove, and none wore rain hats.
I suppose, said Treves, they don't mind being wet, because all the rest of Gaia is getting wet. The trees, the grass, the soil, all wet, and all equally part of Gaia, along with the Gaians.
I think it makes sense, said Pellerat. The sun will come out soon enough, and everything will dry quickly. The clothing won't wrinkle or shrink. There's no chilling effect. And, since there aren't any unnecessary pathogenic microorganisms, no one will get colds or flu or pneumonia. Why worry about a bit of damp, then?
Treves had no trouble in seeing the logic of that, but he hated to let go of his grievance. He said, Still, there is no need for it to rain as we are leaving. After all, the rain is voluntary. Gaia wouldn't rain if it didn't want to. It's almost as though it were showing its contempt for us.
Perhaps, and Pellerat's lip twitched a bit, Gaia is weeping with sorrow at our leaving.
Treves said, That may be, but I'm not.
Actually, Pellerat went on, I presume that the soil in this region needs a wetting down, and that need is more important than your desire to have the sunshine.
Treves smiled. I suspect you really like this world, don't you? Even aside from bliss, I mean.
Yes, I do, said Pellerat, a trace defensively. I've always led a quiet, orderly life. And think how I could manage here, with a whole world laboring to keep it quiet and orderly. After all, Golan, when we build a house, or that ship, we try to create a perfect shelter. We equip it with everything we need. We arrange to have its temperature, air quality, illumination, and everything else of importance, controlled by us and manipulated in a way to make it perfectly accommodating to us. Gaia is just an extension of the desire for comfort and security extended to an entire planet. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that, said Treves, is that my house or my ship is engineered to suit me. I am not engineered to suit it. If I were part of Gaia, then no matter how ideally the planet was devised to suit me, I would be greatly disturbed over the fact that I was also being devised to suit it.
Pellerat pursed his lips. One could argue that every society molds its population to fit itself. Customs develop that make sense within the society, and that chain every individual firmly to its needs. In the societies I know, one can revolt. There are eccentrics, even criminals.
Do you want eccentrics and criminals?
Why not? You and I are eccentrics. We're certainly not typical of the people living on Terminus. As for criminals, that's a matter of definition. And if criminals are the price we must pay for rebels, heretics, and geniuses, I'm willing to pay it. I demand the price be paid.
Are criminals the only possible payment? Can't you have genius without criminals?
You can't have geniuses and saints without having people far outside the norm. And I don't see how you can have such things on only one side of the norm. There is bound to be a certain symmetry. In any case, I want a better reason for my decision to make Gaia the model for the future of humanity
than that it is a planetary version of a comfortable house.
Oh, my dear fellow, I wasn't trying to argue you into being satisfied with your decision. I was just making an observation.
He broke off. Bliss was striding toward them, her dark hair wet and her robe clinging to her body and emphasizing the rather generous width of her hips. She was nodding to them as she came.
I'm sorry I delayed you, she said, panting a little. It took longer to check with Dome than I had anticipated.
Surely, said Trevise, you know everything he knows.
Sometimes it's a matter of difference in interpretation. We are not identical after all, so we discuss. Look here, she said with a touch of asperity. You have two hands. They are each part of you, and they seem identical, except for one being the mirror image of the other. Yet you do not use them entirely alike, do you? There are some things you do with your right hand most of the time, and some with your left. Differences in interpretation, so to speak.
She's got you, said Pellerat, with obvious satisfaction.
Trevise nodded.
It's an effective analogy, if it were relevant, and I'm not at all sure it is. In any case, does this mean we can board the ship now? It is raining.
Yes. Yes, our people are all off it, and it's in perfect shape.
Then, with a sudden curious look at Trevise,
you're keeping dry. The raindrops are missing you.
Yes, indeed, said Trevise. I am avoiding wetness.
But doesn't it feel good to be wet now and then?
Absolutely, but at my choice, not the rain's.
Bliss shrugged. Well, as you please. All our baggage is loaded, so let's board.
The three walked toward the far star. The rain was growing still lighter, but the grass was quite wet. Trevise found himself walking gingerly, but Bliss had kicked off her slippers, which she was now carrying in one hand, and was slogging through the grass barefoot.
It feels delightful, she said, in response to Trevise's downward glance.
Good, he said absently. Then, with a touch of irritation, why are those other Gaians standing about anyway?
Bliss said, they're recording this event, which Gaia finds momentous. You are important to us, Trevise. Consider that if you should change your mind as a result of this trip and decide against us, we would never grow into Galaxia, or even remain as Gaia.
Then I represent life and death for Gaia, for the whole world.
We believe so.
Trevise stopped suddenly and took off his rain hat. Blue patches were appearing in the sky. He said,
but you have my vote in your favor now. If you kill me, I'll never be able to change it.
Golan, murmured Pellerat, shocked. That is a terrible thing to say.
Typical of an isolate, said Bliss calmly. You must understand, Trevise, that we are not interested in you as a person, or even in your vote, but in the truth, in the facts of the matter. You are only important as a conduit to the truth, and your vote as an indication of the truth. That is what we want from you. And if we kill you to avoid a change in your vote, we would merely be hiding the truth from ourselves.
If I tell you the truth as non-Gaia, will you all then cheerfully agree to die?
Not entirely cheerfully, perhaps, but it's what it would amount to in the end.
Trevise shook his head. If anything ought to convince me that Gaia is a horror and should die, it might be that very statement you've just made. Then he said, his eyes returning to the patiently watching, and presumably listening, Gaians.
Why are they spread out like that?
And why do you need so many? If one of them observes this event and stores it in his or her memory, isn't it available to all the rest of the planet? Can't it be stored in a million different places if you want it to be? Bliss said, They are observing this each from a different angle, and each is storing it in a slightly different brain. When all the observations are studied, it will be seen that what is taking place will be far better understood from all the observations together than from any one of them taken singly. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts, in other words. Exactly. You have grasped the basic justification of Gaia's existence. You, as a human individual, are composed of perhaps 50 trillion cells. But you, as a multicellular individual, are far more important than those 50 trillion as the sum of their individual importance. Surely you would agree with that.
Yes, said Treviz, I agree with that.
He stepped into the ship and turned briefly for one more look at Gaia. The brief rain had lent a new freshness to the atmosphere. He saw a green, lush, quiet, peaceful world, a garden of serenity set amid the turbulence of the weary galaxy. And Treviz earnestly hoped he would never see it again.
6.
When the airlock closed behind them, Treviz felt as though he had shut out not exactly a nightmare, but something so seriously abnormal that it had prevented him from breathing freely. He was fully aware that an element of that abnormality was still with him in the person of Bliss. While she was there, Gaia was there. And yet he was also convinced that her presence was essential. It was the black box working again. And earnestly he hoped he would never begin believing in that black box too much. He looked about the vessel and found it beautiful. It had been his only since Mayor Harlebrano of the Foundation had forced him into it and sent him out among the stars, a living lightning rod designed to draw the fire of those she considered enemies of the Foundation. That task was done, but the ship was still his, and he had no plans to return it. It had been his for merely a matter of a few months, but it seemed like home to him, and he could only dimly remember what had once been his home in Terminus. Terminus, the off-center hub of the Foundation, destined by Selden's plan to form a second and greater empire in the course of the next 5 centuries, except that he, Treviz, had now derailed it. By his own decision, he was converting the Foundation to nothing, and was making possible instead a new society, a new scheme of life, a frightening revolution that would be greater than any since the development of multicellular life. Now he was engaged in a journey designed to prove to himself, or to disprove, that what he had done was right. He found himself lost in thought and motionless, so that he shook himself in self-irritation. He hastened to the pilot room and found his computer still there. It glistened. Everything glistened. There had been a most careful cleaning. The contacts he closed, nearly at random, worked perfectly, and it surely seemed with greater ease than ever. The ventilating system was so noiseless that he had to put his hand over the vents to make sure he felt air currents. The circle of light on the computer glowed invitingly. Treviz touched it, and the light spread out to cover the desktop, and the outline of a right and left hand appeared on it. He drew a deep breath and realized that he had stopped breathing for a while. The Gaians knew nothing about Foundation technology, and they might easily have damaged the computer without meaning any malice. Thus far they had not. The hands were still there. The crucial test came with the laying on of his own hands, however, and for a moment he hesitated. He would know almost at once if anything were wrong. But if something was, what could he do? For repairs, he would have to go back to Terminus, and if he did, he felt quite confident that Mayor Brano would not let him leave again. And if he did not? He could feel his heart pounding, and there was clearly no point in deliberately lengthening the suspense. He thrust his hands out, right, left, and placed them on the outlines upon the desk. At once he had the illusion of another pair of hands holding his. His senses extended, and he could see Gaia in all directions, green and moist, the Gaian still watching. When he willed himself to look upward, he saw a largely cloudy sky. Again at his will, the clouds vanished, and he looked at an unbroken blue sky with the orb of Gaia's sun filtered out. Again he willed, and the blue parted, and he saw the stars. He wiped them out, and willed, and saw the galaxy like a foreshortened pinwheel. He tested the computerized image, adjusting its orientation, altering the apparent progress of time, making it spin first in one direction, then the other. He located the sun of Seychelles, the nearest important star to Gaia, then the sun of Terminus, then of Trantor, one after the other. He traveled from star to star in the galactic map that dwelt in the bowels of the computer. Then he withdrew his hands and let the world of reality surround him again, and realized he had been standing all this time, half-bowing over the computer to make the hand contact. He felt stiff and had to stretch his back muscles before sitting down. He stared at the computer with warm relief. It had worked perfectly. It had been, if anything, more responsive, and what he felt for it he could only describe as love. After all, while he held its hands, he resolutely refused to admit to himself that he thought of it as her hands. They were part of each other, and his will directed, controlled, experienced, and was part of a greater self. He and it must feel in a small way, he suddenly and disturbingly thought, what Gaia did in a much larger way. He shook his head. No. In the case of the computer and himself, it was he, Trevise, who was in entire control. The computer was a thing of total submission. He rose and moved out to the compact galley and dining area. There was plenty of food of all kinds, with proper refrigeration and easy heating facilities. He had already noted that the book films in his room were in the proper order, and he was reasonably sure, no, completely sure, that Pellerad had his personal library in safe storage. He would otherwise surely have heard from him by now. Pellerad. That reminded him. He stepped into Pellerad's room. Is there room for bliss here, Janoff? Oh, yes, quite. I can convert the common room into her bedroom. Bliss looked up wide-eyed. I have no desire for a separate bedroom. I am quite content to stay here with Pell. I suppose, though, that I may use the other rooms when needed, the gym, for instance. Certainly, any room but mine. Good. That's what I would have suggested be the arrangement if I had had the making of it. Naturally, you will stay out of ours. Naturally, said Trevise, looking down and realizing that his shoes overlapped the threshold. He took a half step backward and said grimly, These are not honeymoon quarters, Bliss. I should say, in view of its compactness, that it is exactly that, even though Gaia extended it to half again as wide as it was. Trevise tried not to smile. You'll have to be very friendly. We are, said Pellerat, clearly ill at ease at the topic of conversation. But really, old chap, you can leave it to us to make our own arrangements. Actually, I can't, said Trevise slowly. I still want to make it clear that these are not honeymoon accommodations. I have no objection to anything you do by mutual consent,
But you must realize that you will have no privacy. I hope you understand that, Bliss.
There is a door, said Bliss, and I imagine you will not disturb us when it is locked, short of a real emergency, that is.
Of course I won't. However, there is no soundproofing.
What you are trying to say, Trevise, said Bliss, is that you will hear quite clearly any conversation we may have and any sounds we may make in the course of sex.
Yes, that is what I'm trying to say. With that in mind, I expect you may find you will have to limit your activities here. This may discommode you, and I'm sorry, but that's the situation as it is.
Pellerat cleared his throat and said gently, Actually, Golan, this is a problem I've already had to face. You realize that any sensation Bliss experiences when together with me is experienced by all of Gaia.
I have thought of that, Janoff, said Trevise, looking as though he were repressing a wince. I didn't intend to mention it, just in case the thought had not occurred to you.
But it did, I'm afraid, said Pellerat.
Bliss said, Don't make too much of that, Trevise. At any given moment, there may be thousands of human beings on Gaia who are engaged in sex, millions who are eating, drinking, or engaged in other pleasure-giving activities. This gives rise to a general aura of delight that Gaia feels, every part of it. The lower animals, the plants, the minerals, have their progressively milder pleasures that also contribute to a generalized joy of consciousness that Gaia feels in all its parts always, and that is unfelt in any other world.
We have our own particular joys, said Trevise, which we can share after a fashion if we wish, or keep private if we wish.
If you could feel ours, you would know how poverty-stricken you isolates are in that respect.
How can you know what we feel?
Without knowing how you feel, it is still reasonable to suppose that a world of common pleasures must be more intense than those available to a single, isolated individual.
Perhaps. But even if my pleasures were poverty-stricken, I would keep my own joys and sorrows and be satisfied with them, thin as they are, and be me, and not blood brother to the nearest rock.
Don't sneer, said Bliss. You value every mineral crystal in your bones and teeth, and would not have one of them damaged, though they have no more consciousness than the average rock crystal of the same size.
That's true enough, said Trevise reluctantly. But we've managed to get off the subject. I don't care if all Gaia shares your joy, Bliss, but I don't want to share it. We're living here in close quarters, and I do not wish to be forced to participate in your activities, even indirectly.
Pellerat said, This is an argument over nothing, my dear chap. I am no more anxious than you to have your privacy violated, nor mine, for that matter. Bliss and I will be discreet, won't we, Bliss?
It will be as you wish, Pell.
After all, said Pellerat, we are quite likely to be planet-bound for considerably longer periods than we will be spaceborne, and on planets, the opportunities for true privacy.
I don't care what you do on planets, interrupted Trevise, but on this ship I am master.
Exactly, said Pellerat.
Then, with that straightened out, it is time to take off.
But wait.
Pellerat reached out to tug at Trevise's sleeve.
Take off for where? You don't know where Earth is, nor do I, nor does Bliss, nor does your computer, for you told me long ago that it lacks any information on Earth. What do you intend doing, then? You can't simply drift through space at random, my dear chap.
At that, Trevise smiled with what was almost joy.
For the first time since he had fallen into the grip of Gaia, he felt master of his own fate. "I assure you," he said, "that it is not my intention to drift, Janov. I know exactly where I am going."
Seven. Pellerat walked quietly into the pilot room after he had waited long moments while his small tap on the door had gone unanswered. He found Trevise looking with keen absorption at the starfield. Pellerat said, "Golan?" and waited. Trevise looked up. "Genoff, sit down. Where's Bliss?"
"Sleeping. We're out in space, I see."
"You see correctly." Trevise was not surprised at the other's mild surprise. In the new gravitic ships, there was simply no way of detecting takeoff. There were no inertial effects, no accelerational push, no noise, no vibration. Possessing the capacity to insulate itself from outside gravitational fields to any degree up to total, the far star lifted from a planetary surface as though it were floating on some cosmic sea. And while it did so, the gravitational effect within the ship, paradoxically, remained normal. While the ship was within the atmosphere, of course, there was no need to accelerate, so that the whine and vibration of rapidly passing air would be absent. As the atmosphere was left behind, however, acceleration could take place, and at rapid rates, without affecting the passengers. It was the ultimate in comfort, and Trevise did not see how it could be improved upon until such time as human beings discovered a way of whisking through hyperspace without ships, and without concern about nearby gravitational fields that might be too intense. Right now, the far star would have to speed away from Gaia's sun for several days before the gravitational intensity was weak enough to attempt the jump.
"Golan, my dear fellow," said Pellerat, "may I speak with you for a moment or two? You are not too busy."
"Not at all busy. The computer handles everything once I instruct it properly. And sometimes it seems to guess what my instructions will be and satisfies them almost before I can articulate them."
Trevise brushed the top of the desk lovingly.
Pellerat said, "We've grown very friendly, Golan, in the short time we've known each other, although I must admit that it scarcely seems a short time to me, so much has happened. It's really peculiar when I stop to think of my moderately long life that half of all the events I have experienced were squeezed into the last few months, or so it would seem. I could almost suppose..." Trevise held up a hand.
"Janov, you're spinning outward from your original point, I'm sure. You began by saying we've grown very friendly in a very short time."
"Yes, we have, and we still are. For that matter, you've known Bliss an even shorter time, and have grown even friendlier."
"That's different, of course," said Pellerat, clearing his throat in some embarrassment.
"Of course," said Trevise. "But what follows from our brief but enduring friendship?"
"If, my dear fellow, we are still friends, as you've just said, then I must pass on to Bliss, whom, as you've also just said, is peculiarly dear to me."
"I understand. And what of that?"
"I know, Golan, that you are not fond of..."